Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You are listening to a cut from Sherry, the song that made the Four Seasons famous, one of 34 musical numbers in Jersey Boys. The Broadway touring company is in Columbus at the Ohio Theater through September 29. For more information, go to the link at our website at wosu.org/allsides. We were told a few months ago that men were the fan favorites for this production, so All Sides headed down to the opening night of Jersey Boys to talk to some of those theatergoers. Bob Fathman of Dublin was there to see the show for the first time. He told us why he picked up tickets.
I guess it's the great reputation that it has in the media as well as through our friends. And it's music of era that I know. My wife and I are in our 60s, and it's music we're familiar with and will enjoy. We look forward to musicals. What comes to mind is, high school and then college and then having children. In 2 days, we're leaving to go to my 50-year high school reunion in Detroit. So I like the music of Frankie Valli. It puts a smile on my face. It reminds me of drive-up restaurants with car hops, convertibles, sultry nights.
Joining us now to talk about that reputation, maybe those convertibles and sultry nights all of which are embraced in the Jersey Boys, are the four stars of the touring production now in Columbus. Brandon Andrus, who plays Nick Massey. If you're watching television, they'll wave for you. Nick Cosgrove, Frankie Valli, Nicholas Dramard, who plays Tommy DeVito, and Jason Kappas, who plays Bob Gaudio. Welcome to the show, all.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate you taking the time. They did have a show. Everybody but I guess Nick was on stage last night. Last night was your night off, so you should be especially perky today during the interview.
Yes, ma'am.
I expect a little bit more from you. In a recent interview with the Grand Rapids Press in Michigan, and I'm from Grand Rapids, so I read the whole thing. Bob Gaudio said that it's rare that he's been in the theater during a show and didn't see tears, and usually more tears coming from men. Do you guys see the same thing, and what do you make of that?
Yeah, we definitely do see that. The guys are sometimes they want to restrain themselves a little bit, I think, but they have actually trouble doing that. And it starts with the foot, and the foot starts tapping, and then they start swaying a little bit, and pretty soon they're clapping and cheering along, and it's really fun to see. I mean, I get to, as I play Bob Gaudio, one of my favorite moments is I get to stand up on the bridge and watch while Frankie sings "Can't Take My Eyes Off of You," on stage. And because I'm looking down at him, I get a pretty good view of, those first like four or five rows. And right. And I get to see these, couples, who are just, they're sort of cuddling up and they're being transported back to those, those drive-ins and certainly those sultry nights, I think. So yeah. It's very special to get to watch that.
A lot of couples in the audience.
Yes.
Yeah. What's it like playing in Jersey Boys, playing these parts, playing living legends? That is, of course, except for, Nick Massey, who passed away in about 2000, I think. I guess Nick Cosgrove, Frankie Valli, there's a Frankie camp or something like that. What do they teach you to do this job?
Well, first of all, playing someone who's still alive and performing himself, of course, there's a certain responsibility, to be doing this storytelling justice and, finding your own sound, but also trying to emulate his sound, because you still have to bring parts of yourself to the character. We're not necessarily trying to be exact cookie cutter versions, still trying to bring our own sides of creativity to the character and to the storytelling. But I actually got to see him perform in Chicago live when he played at the Chicago Theater. We were there for 9 weeks. So to get to see him perform live and kind of take away a sense of just his personality and his stage presence, there's nobody else like him. So, to get to walk away from that performance and do my best to take in the things that I saw into my own performance at Frankie Camp, oddly enough,
arts and crafts, canoe races.
Yeah. Imagine like a kumbaya circle
campfires,
where we're all singing in high falsetto in a kumbaya circle. No. It's pretty much a 3-day extensive where they'll find, they'll narrow down from like 20 guys who they've danced for the part and have had sing. They'll narrow it down to like 9 or 10 guys, and it's a 3-day extensive. The first day we'll work with Katie Agresta, who's the main vocal coach, who's based out of New York. We'll Skype in with her if we're not in the city to do check-ins with our voice. So the first day we work on, the audition music's cuts with her. The second day we'll work through the 30-page packet of sides of scene work from the show with the production supervisors. And then the third day we'll work through choreography. So it's pretty much, even if they're not necessarily casting at that point in time, they're constantly looking for more Frankie Valleys, for future replacements, constantly thinking of people to have on the back burner for future casting.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I have the stars of Jersey Boys in the studio right now. If you have any questions or comments for them, Brandon Andrus, Nick Cosgrove, Nicholas Dramard, and Jason Kappas, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you get into Frankie Camp, does that mean you're going to be a Frankie or you might be a Frankie?
It doesn't necessarily mean you'll ever be cast.
Okay.
They also hold these camps to see if you have the stamina because it's not necessarily just being able to sing this music. It's being able to do it night after night after night. So in doing those types of camps and spending more time with, with future hopeful Frankies, some people, they just come to learn that they're, don't have the stamina to withstand it. But for the most part, they're also casting. There needs to be 4 Frankies for every company. So there needs to be the guy who does it 6 times a week, guy who does it twice a week, the Joe Pesci has to cover Frankie Valley, and there's a swing that covers him as well. So throughout those camps, they're also looking at, we might love this guy, but he might be better as a swing that could cover Frankie because he can do all these other things as well. So they're constantly looking to replace in any of those 4 areas when they do hold Frankie camps.
All of you guys are doing the moves. Did any of you go to Frankie camp? And no?
Well, our audition process is not too dissimilar. I mean, mine was about a week. I don't know if yours was too, but... Yeah, when I initially auditioned for this, I auditioned 2 years before I actually got it. So it's in a very similar situation where you have one day you work on the singing, and then the next day you get brought in and you do the song or the sides, and then you come in, you do the dance, and it's the same process. And then after you've gone through that, then you get brought back in to kind of perform in front of the creatives. So it's constantly being vetted, I guess would be the best way to put it, just to make sure that we can be able to do this.
Brandon, you've been on the road for 2 years. Have you been playing Nick Massey the whole time?
Yes.
So are you getting bored with that?
No, I'm not getting bored with that. I mean, it's a great opportunity to be able to perform every night with these people. And, it's such a great show. It doesn't get boring when you take into factor, you get new cast members like Nicholas came in just a few months ago with Cosgrove over here. So it's like constantly getting new energy and everything like that. And plus, we have the advantage of being on tour, so every city has its own personality. And so you have different audiences that kind of have their different quirks. And so different parts of the show will kind of stand out. Like right now, we're in Ohio, so all the Ohio jokes are really selling really well.
They sell better in Ohio or elsewhere?
Yep. actually, they really sell just outside of Ohio. Like Pittsburgh, they love just
Michigan.
Ragging on. Yeah, Michigan, like they love that. But it's that kind of a thing. So you constantly are being, finding something new and interesting to keep yourself in it.
The personality of the audience is, people always tell you, they're always such great audiences in Columbus, but really, isn't there more to it than being a great audience? Are there some audiences that are more engaged? Is it just a matter of who claps the loudest? How do you do that?
I know for myself as an audience member that I'm quite quiet. Even if I'm really enjoying something, I'm not loud and rambunctious and clapping, and I'm not laughing out loud. Even if I'm still enjoying it. So I never vary, you know, if the audience is enjoying it or not, if they're clapping or if they're not, because I've had friends who've been in the house, like, who've been watching, and I'm like, man, the audience was really quiet tonight, and they were like, no, they were on the edge of their seats, you know, trying to listen every word and catch every nuance. So you never really know. It changes.
I always find myself smiling a lot when I'm listening to the songs. They just make me smile because, you know, I'm old enough. You guys kind of grew up with Jersey Boys. You know, I grew up with the Four Seasons. One of these days I'm going to get the Jersey Girls on the show because they've been fabulous as well. They've had, what, four women playing, I was told, 60 roles?
Yeah, on stage, there's three women.
Just three women.
Yeah, just
three women.
Girls.
Okay,
yep.
On stage. Okay, well, and I saw, I double-checked that. I thought there were only three women last night, but then in the
program, there's a fourth, yes, it's our female swing.
Okay.
So that if one of the girls is on vacation or sick, the swing goes on and plays all those roles. So the swing knows all those 60 parts.
That's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people playing a lot of roles.
Yeah, the ensemble in this show does amazing work, and they have a huge responsibility because they, you know, there's not a lot of set to the show. You know, it's pretty basic because the scenes move so fast. And it's really the ensemble that creates this world that, you know, the Four Seasons sort of take part in. So they're the ones, you know, playing the fans and, you know, the community members and the mobsters and everything, you know. So it's really, they have a huge responsibility.
I know that there's an orchestra below, but when they're playing music, are they, I know, and obviously the drummers are really drumming, but what about the rest of the instruments?
They're not below, actually. They're above.
Oh, okay.
They are suspended up on stage right and stage left.
Okay.
Above the stage. And so everything is live. There's nothing in the can. And there's only three songs that are done to a click track because they're matched to whatever is the background behind it, like at the end of the show when the flashes are going off with the drums. It's so everything's timed together. But pretty much everything is live that you see on stage.
Mm-hmm. One of the coolest things is when they use those old television cameras. I like that. I forgot about that from the last time I saw it. And is that fun to do that?
Yeah. Yeah, having the projection in the back.
It's hard not to. Yeah. For me to not want to look up at it, you know, instead of look at the camera. I think it's a neat effect.
Yeah. I got a couple notes. I had to calm down my eyebrows. My eyebrows were going up way too much when I got onto the television. I was like,
Okay. Why do you think that is? I try to ignore the fact that there are cameras in here right now.
Right.
That's the best.
Oh, I've never looked at them before. I do love, I mean, when I first saw the show, you know, for the first time, though, that is one of my favorite moments where, like, when Sherry hits and for the first time that screen comes down and you see it live. And it, you know, with the staging of those numbers, you know, they're very precise in how far out we can move, because if I move a little more to the right, I'm blocking his face. So it's very, everything is so tightly choreographed. Mm-hmm.
And it must have been back in the day, too.
Yeah,
I would imagine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
Sure.
Yeah. I am talking with the stars of Jersey Boys, the two-act musical, being staged at the Ohio Theater now through September 29. For more information, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll be right back with more music and more of the stars of the Jersey Boys. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You're listening to a cut from the Jersey Boys, the Broadway show that's the touring company is now in Columbus. For more information about that, go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. That is from the show. We were just talking earlier before we went on the air with my guests, the four stars of Jersey Boys here, Brandon Andrus, Nick Cosgrove, Nicholas Dremard, and Jason Kappas. That the tempo in the show is faster than it is with the original music. And tell us why that is, because I'm sure people in the audience notice it too.
I mean,
Brandon?
The best example would be just because it drives the energy. You know, when you pick up the tempo, it drives the energy forward of the song. And so I think that that was more just to keep with the pace of the way that the show is written and the way the vernacular of, you know, the Jersey boys, the way that they would talk so fast. So it's kind of keeps the pace of the show going and keeps everyone on the edge of their seats.
Hmm. That and also we're not giving like the entire full songs of every song,
right?
You know, to kind of again keep it moving forward, that we're giving you enough of a taste or like 3/4 of the song, you know, to move on and still keep you interested.
Yeah.
It kind of keeps pace with society now as well. I mean, if you listen to Sherry on the Jersey Boys soundtrack and then you listen to Sherry, you know, the original cut, it's a good 40 beats per minute slower. And it's great, and it's a lot of fun, but it's much more sort of laid back and relaxing. And, you know, one of the things they were thinking about when they put this show together was, you know, modern audiences and, you know, what's going to keep them engaged and involved, and speeding things up a little bit seemed like a good idea.
I feel so manipulated.
No stone unturned, believe me.
They thought of everything.
Nick, in your message in the program, you say that you are grateful and honored to be part of the Jersey Boys family. And I hear the idea of family a lot when I talk to people that are doing the shows and traveling and, you know, on the road for so long. Is that what you meant? Sorry.
No, it's okay. We got a Nick and Nicholas.
Right. Sorry. But Nick Cosgrove, who plays Frankie Valli.
Say what you were saying again,
about
please.
About the idea of, in the program, you said you're grateful and honored to be part of the Jersey Boys family.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this show that's exactly what the heart of it is. It's a story of brotherhood. It's a story of family. And I feel like that's why people time and time again keep wanting to come to this show. It's not just for the music. It's because you learn about these people's lives. You get a backstage VH1, you know, behind the music tour, and you find that, you know, first of all, they weren't just an overnight sensation. They were on the road, you know, went through divorces, went through deaths of family members. They're real people. And I feel like, you know, they didn't have those types of behind the scenes back then. So to learn about these guys' lives and see that the debt that they had to take on, and that, you know, Frankie chose to take on this debt of Tommy's because in his eyes, he's his brother. And you know, he stuck to his word of saying that, no, although you've hurt me in the past, I love you enough that we're going to take this on together as a group. And I feel like people seeing that type of heart in this show is what keeps them involved and loving it.
Brandon?
You had mentioned that a lot of men cry in this show, and I've found that to be true, especially comparing it to something like Field of Dreams, which is all about fathers and sons, and this one's all about brothers in arms, essentially. And there's a lot about just the male relationship with other men. And so I think for a lot of guys, that's why it does resonate so deeply with them, because this not only takes them back in time to when they were young, but also reminds them of the relationships and the bonds that they've had with other men and with, you know, brothers, essentially. Because what's the line that you say, you know, it's I'm gonna totally mess it up.
Brothers in arms.
Well, it's just about, you know, it's, you know, he is his family, essentially. You have your road family and you have your real family, but both are just as important in this world.
And except for Bob Gaudio, although you know that character joins this still very, very young when he joins the group, the guys have all known each other since they were very young. They grew up together. Nicholas,
yes.
Tell us about the story of the Jersey Boys and how they met for people, listeners, who don't really know.
Well, it's this story of, you know, rags to riches story of these guys from the rough streets of Jersey who wanted to get out and make it big. And so, you know, it really starts. It's the rise and fall of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, how they came together, hit the success, and then what tore them apart. So, I mean, the story is really this fantastical story, which you think is made up, but it's completely true. You know, everything that happens within this band, how they got together, how they hit it big, and then eventually what tore them apart to become Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, as opposed to just the Four Seasons. So
it's kind of amazing how truthful they were, because, you know, Bob Gaudio help put it on, help produce it. And he knows exactly what happened, and they are very honest. We have an email from Judy. She says, I'm 63, so the prime audience for the Four Seasons. Loved them. But I have heard that the spoken language is so raunchy that it spoiled the event for some viewers. Why do you think the producers thought it was important to use that language? In my town, people didn't talk like that, not in front of girls anyway. Anybody want to take a swat at that?
Because it is authentic to the way that they spoke. It is exactly, especially if you know Joe Pesci or Tommy DeVito, they still speak, you know, it's just part of the language. And it's not something that, well, being from Philadelphia and born in Jersey myself, that is kind of how we talk. We just don't realize that we do. But what I find interesting is when people focus on that, as an example, they'll see the show and then, like, they saw it when it was in Columbus 2 years ago, let's say. They'll come back to the show and they'll come up to me and they'll be like, they're like, why'd you add all that swearing in? It's the exact same show it was 2 years ago. And it's like, so getting caught up on that. I mean, that's why we always say it's a PG-13 show.
Yes, definitely.
We do always add that caveat. But I mean, but the reality is it's for a purpose. The first person to actually drop a four-letter word is a woman.
Right.
And that was definitely on purpose. It tells you about her character. It tells you about who she is. And every time that they have pretty much any cursing is for a reason. My character only curses twice, and it's for an emphasis of a moment. So, you know, my answer to that is strictly that I hope you don't get caught up on that, because it is, you know, we have had people say, like, I didn't talk like that. And I was like, well, unless you grew up in Newark, New Jersey, in this time, I don't think everyone around the country did. But this specific place, I've heard some things come out of their mouths, which are even worse than what we have. So,
well, I've heard things come out of people's mouths in Columbus. You know, it is for now. Bob Gaudio doesn't swear as much, it seems.
Not,
at least at first.
Yeah, not quite as much. It kind of like, you know, like the character Nick, Bob, you know, does have, you know, a couple here and there, and you know, they're used to show emphasis because he doesn't swear as much. You know, a lot of times people will say, like, you know, wouldn't it be just as effective if, you know, you did the show but just didn't have any of that? And the thing is, you wouldn't know why, but you would know something was missing. You know, it wouldn't have the edge, it wouldn't have the bite, it wouldn't have the gritty realness, and put you in this location and this time if they didn't have the way that these people actually spoke.
They lived a very stressful life right off the bat. I mean, they're dealing with the mob right off the bat. They grow up with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of their life. And Nicholas Dremard, you play a character that has got his head wrapped around it 24/7, around the whole jail thing and the jailbird aspect of your character. It's kind of funny, and we laugh a little bit with Nick Massey, too. But
yeah.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, all these guys grew up, you know, with police records and breaking and entering. I mean, in the show, Frankie Valli says, you know, like, growing up, they didn't have much. They had, you know, driving guys to card games and breaking and entering, just trying to keep themselves busy. And that's what they fell upon, you know, getting in trouble and trying to grow up in this environment where they didn't have much to do. And so, yeah, there was only a few things you could do. You can join the army, you could be involved in the mob, or you could become a star. That's how you got out of that hole, you know.
Or Bob Gaudio, go to trade school.
Yeah, you know, Bob.
Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, Bob was actually born in Brooklyn, his family was a little bit better off than, you know, the families of these three other guys. So even when they did move to Jersey, Bob was living in Bergenfield, which is a nicer suburb. So, you know, Bob didn't end up in jail until they ended up getting arrested, you know.
In Cleveland.
Well it was actually Columbus.
Really?
It was Columbus, yes.
Why did they change that?
I don't know why they changed that.
Is it in the actual script, Cleveland?
Yeah.
I bet it's because more people know that it actually happened here in Columbus. Cleveland's more.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, if you Google Frankie Valli mugshot, you actually see that, like, it says, oh, you see his mugshot, and you see that
yeah,
it's near Columbus, Ohio, then they were jailed here.
Yeah.
Okay, the truth comes out. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, where we always tell the truth. If you have a question or comment for our guests, the four stars of Jersey Boys, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page, post your question or comment there if you like. How much did you guys know about the Four Seasons, or did you know more because you were geared toward becoming, you know, actors and singers, knew more about the Jersey Boys?
I like saying this because I luckily grew up, my mother only let me listen to the oldies station growing up. So, you know, Frank
what
Sinatra.
What was the station again?
Oldies 104.3 was from Chicago. You know, I'm from Chicago originally. Yeah, so I grew up with Sinatra and Etta James, and I love Motown. Like, Temptations and Can't Take My Eyes Off You was the first Frankie Valli song I'd ever heard. So, like, I've always, always had a passion for this music. And if anything, I prefer listening to oldies than new age, some bubblegum new age music.
You don't sit at home twerking or anything like that?
No, absolutely not.
What about the rest of you?
I mean, I think since we're all in the music business, you know, we may have, I think sometimes we have a broader spectrum of,
right.
of our own music that we listen to. But, you know, I wasn't a Four Seasons fan per se. You know, I didn't have like albums or anything. But, you know, I knew basically all these songs, which is, I think, what also is impressive for people who come to see the show. Even the younger generations, you know, like ourselves or younger, they come and they're, you know, don't necessarily know what to expect. And then they hear this music and they're like, oh, I know that.
Right.
You know, maybe they didn't know they were Four Seasons songs, but they've heard them in movies and commercials and on the radio. I mean, this music has been so pervasive for the last 50 years in our pop culture that everybody has some sort of connection to it.
I thought it was interesting how Bob Gaudio, how he described what his inspiration was for producing the show in the first place, was he saw the guys in the Deer Hunter before they were being deployed singing a song. I can't remember which one it was. Can't Take My Eyes Off You, I think it was. And it was, he said, my gosh, it's so part of our culture. I guess I imagine there's something to make of this.
It must be a very heady thing.
Yeah.
it's woven into the fabric of pop culture of the 60s on. I mean, they were, when you think of the top three groups of the late 1960s, there was the Beatles, there was the Beach Boys, and then there was the Four Seasons. Mm-hmm. And that's just, and so we're just telling that story of how they became that.
Yeah, and the Beach Boys and the Four Seasons were the only two bands to remain on the charts after the British Invasion. So they were there before the British Invasion happened, and then they were still there. So you can see from the fan base and their popularity that they just stuck it through and people love them.
And you guys explain why in the show.
Yeah.
Why that is. Bob?
Yeah, you're the one who has the line.
I should say.
The fan base.
Jason?
At the end of the act, when we're singing Dawn.
Why?
Like,
why?
You're like, what do I say?
Like, what?
He's like, he's off stage.
Oh, out of context, yeah. I can't one line from the show.
It all goes away.
No,
yeah, I mean, the Four Seasons had a unique connection to their fans, I think. You know, I mean, the Beach Boys, you know, there was sort of this kind of, you know, West Coast culture, and the Beatles, you know, had this sort of hippie thing. That's very generalizing. I mean, obviously, everyone loves the Beatles. But, you know, for the Four Seasons, I mean, their audience were just like them. You know, and I think that's the sense that their fans got, is they knew that these guys were just regular guys. You know, they weren't some group that was put together by a music studio to sell records. You know, they were just normal guys from, you know, New Jersey who happened to, you know, have these gifts and come together. And so they were able to relate to the working class, to, you know, the blue collar folks and the people going overseas and all that stuff. They were just very relatable, you know.
And they were very cognizant of that's where they went to play, that's where they went to sing.
Yeah, and I think they felt that, you know, responsibility.
Not to belabor the Bob Gaudio interview, but it was really good. In that same one, he said that unlike the Beach Boys, the Four Seasons voices were individual. He said that they had an unusual sound because they rubbed a bit, and that gave it an edge vocally. And I was wondering if you guys work on that rub, if that's part of, when you're working together, something you're trying to achieve too.
Well, Nick and I sometimes the night before at a bar might work on that. No. I will say that, you know, Bob Gaudio has done a lot of interviews over the course of the show. And one of the things he talked about specifically with Nick Massey is the sound that they had created as the Four Seasons, he couldn't replicate because Nick Massey was the one who created the harmonies. So if you want to say that it's that, I do know that our music team really worked on replicating that sort of sound. So it naturally, I think, is just in the show. And it's because we talk about it in the show where Bob Crew decides that he's going to double Frankie's voice. And so we do actually, I said before, everything's live. So how do you double his voice? Well, it's because the people that are backstage are singing his part. So everything's doubled and they're just slightly underneath and everything. So that's how that creates that sound.
The Brandon Andrews, the character Nick Massey that you play, is to me the most mysterious one, because at the end you learn a lot about him that you never would have suspected.
And there's even more, trust me.
I there must have been. What else do you know about him that doesn't come through in the show?
Well, he was an enigma. No one, I mean, when they were writing the show, every person that they interviewed about him, because he was already gone, had a different opinion of him and had a different perception. And so they kind of, when writing the show, decided, well, I guess, you know, we can kind of take him and make him more of a theatrical device, which I think the Nick that is portrayed in the show is maybe not necessarily the actual Nick. If you look at all the Nicks, all of the original photos and videos of Nick, he's very smiley and very like, yeah, he's like very 60s, where this is, they've really toned it down and made him very more street and Jersey and everything like that. So other than that, I would say, but the amazing thing about him is just talking about his alcoholism, his womanizing, his sex addiction. And then on top of that, after he left, his daughter at one point bought him a paint set and he became a painter. And of course, what did he start painting? Nudes. So, I mean, the guy is like just amazing to research and to learn about. But the show itself, I'd say that Nick Massey in the show is more of a character necessarily as compared to, because they weren't beholden to live people who are like, well, you can't do that, or this is what actually happened. They could actually kind of mold him.
Yeah. Well, what I heard, though, is when the Massey estate, like a lot of the family members, came and saw the show on Broadway, and they said, no, you got the gist of him. Like, really, you really did him justice. So it's testament of what they did with the show, just amazing that they were able to portray, even he was so mysterious, that his family said, no, that's, yeah, you got him right.
And Nicholas Dremard, the scene where Nick Massey is just castigating Tommy DeVito for being such a pig. I wondered, is all that true about Tommy DeVito?
Tommy said that everything's true except for he never wore his underwear for 3 days in a row.
That's the only thing he took exception to.
Which is the nicest thing he said about him. In that, wow. In that, monologue there at that point. My guests are the four stars of Jersey Boys. It's at the Ohio Theater right now. For more information, you can go to our website at WOSU.org and check out the, they'll be there through, I think it's the 29th.
Mm-hmm. This Sunday.
You can see who I'm talking to if you go to Facebook right now. I think they posted a photo there. You can also post a question or comment if you'd like. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Everybody's being so shy today. The last time I had the stars from this show on 2 years ago, different set of guys, but you guys were rocking and rolling those phones. So if you have a question or comment, now's your chance, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Your love and hand out, baby. Begging, begging.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. With me in the studio, Brandon Andrus plays Nick Massey, Nick Cosgrove plays Frankie Valli, Nicholas Dromard plays Tommy DeVito, and Jason Kappas plays Bob Gaudio from Jersey Boys. It's at the Ohio Theater right now. For more information, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We were told, I mentioned this earlier, that men were fan favorites for this production, and we've talked a little bit about that. I wanted to hear from another one. All Sides headed to the Columbus opening night of Jersey Boys to talk to some of those fans. And in the lobby of the Ohio Theater, Jonathan Turner told us what he loves about the show.
We've seen the show in New York and Chicago. I love the story and I love the music. I obviously grew up during the Four Seasons times, so all of those songs have relevance for me. You know, when you're younger, things aren't as complicated, and that music for me was a youthful kind of time, and so it was just a little less complicated. Life was good.
Do you hear from fans very often? Do you get to actually hear from fans?
Yeah, there will often be people, you know, out at the stage door afterward.
Okay.
You know, sometimes they're just big fans of the show, you know, being on tour. Like, a lot of times we will see people who come see the show, you know, in different locations. They kind of follow it when it's anywhere near
like
them.
Like deadheads.
Yeah, yeah. But often, and including those people, they're, you know, usually were Four Seasons song or fans, and they will often share stories with us about, you know, the time they met Frankie Valli, or, you know, the first concert that they went to, stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's good. It's important for them. They've, you know, they're taken back and they want to share, you know, their memories. It's fun. It's fun to hear.
Yeah. This is kind of cool too. When we were in Detroit, there were two women at the stage door who had a photo album of, like, they were either groupies of the Four Seasons, or I think one of them had dated one of the Four Seasons and had all of these old pictures, like a whole photo album with them that we all stood around and they, like, showed us all the pictures. So it's, you know, it's cool to see that this was some people's lives, you know, how much they really loved this group and followed them.
And talk about a different time, because now that would be all over Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or whatever. And the point is made in my reading and preparing for the show, and I think to a certain degree through the show, that it was a different time. There were a lot more secrets. You guys had a lot more to hide. Now, some people would brag about being in jail, but in those days, it was something you wanted to hide.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'll just use the news this morning. I'm literally watching the news, and within the first 5 minutes, they decide to tell me that Miley Cyrus got a new tattoo on the bottom of her feet. Why? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff going on in the world that we should be talking about. But, you know, but that's the kind of thing where if they would have found out, you know, that the Four Seasons were arrested in Columbus and it was that kind of sensationalist news and stuff, I mean, they may not have been the same group, or they might have even been bigger. You never know. It's such a different attitude nowadays, you know.
Right.
Yeah, they actually were, they kind of hid their age for a long time. They pretended to be younger than they were to cater to another crowd. So until they were arrested in Columbus, people thought they were younger. And they were actually like 5, 6, 7 years older than what people thought.
Well, how old were they?
Nick Massey was 33, 34 when they got arrested.
And they were pretending to be in their early, mid, late 20s to be like the boy band of boy group, you know?
Right, right.
I mean, you got to remember,
Bob
Nick
was actually that young.
Yeah, Bob was.
Nick Bob was and actually Tommy. 12.
No, yeah, he was actually, they made him older. Nick and Tommy actually spent 10 years trying to get a group together before Frankie was even thrown into the mix.
Yeah.
I mean, that tells you how old those two were. So
right.
It's just, I guess it's those good Italian jeans. They looked young enough to pull it off.
Yeah.
Nice complexions. Rick in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I was 2 years ago, I went to the show. I was reluctant to go. My sister-in-law and my nieces were in town. I grew up in the 60s, never really appreciated the music of that time. I'm not a great fan of contemporary musicals. I feel like I can trust the older ones, but I was blown away by it. It was so much deeper than what I expected between the personalities of the characters, the history of the band, the history of the time, the Joe Pesci thing. It was just fantastic. I would recommend it for everybody.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
You're welcome.
Let's see. Richard in North Linden, you're on the air. Welcome, Richard.
Hi. I wanted to know what section of Newark they grew up in. I grew up in the 50s in the Balesburg section near Sacred Heart Church in South Orange Avenue.
I don't know. I mean, do they describe that in the show?
Belleville. Yeah.
Belleville.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Belleville. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you seen the show, Richard?
Not yet. But as I said, I grew up in the 50s, so I remember that music well.
Well,
yeah.
You might recognize...
at least one or two.
if not all. Thanks, Richard, for the call. Michael and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. My question for the Jersey Boys is if they have any thoughts on the Ohio Theater.
Oh, it is one of the most... I couldn't wait to come back.
Yeah.
I was here 9 years ago, and it's still one of the most beautiful in the whole country. It's just such a great one.
Yeah, I was here a couple of years ago doing Mary Poppins, and I love the walking in and seeing
that beautiful
channel.
That's right, you were Bert.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. I saw that one.
Oh,
yeah,
excellent.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, we end up, you know, in a lot of the cities, we end up in, you know, convention centers or opera houses, you know, which can be nice and modern and stuff, but it's nice when we get, you know, to come around to a theater like this that, you know, feels a little bit more like, you know, New York, Broadway-style theater, you know, and it's got the character.
And the sound is better,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
We love the sound in these.
Was it true, though, too, that they were almost going to destroy this theater?
Michael, do you know the story?
The only thing I know is I think it was built in 1927, 1929.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were within hours of taking it to the wrecking ball. And then some patron of the arts came forward with enough seed money to save it. And it took years for them to do that. But it really is a beautiful place.
I'm glad they did. It's so ornate. Yeah. Even when you walk in the lobby is has this glow to it. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Speaking of Facebook, there's a group that I'm kind of part of called After the Final Curtain on Facebook, and it's about trying to save theaters like this.
Oh.
So if anyone has an interest in that sort of stuff, they can go there, and we can try to save the rest of the ones and the rest of the gems that are lying around the country.
So many. Thank you, Michael, for the call. Diana in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I'm calling because
Diana, we keep losing you, and we lost you solidly.
Oh, no.
Try to call back, Diana. We still have time to get your call. If we can, we have an email from Robert. He writes, "My wife and I saw Jersey Boys and absolutely loved it." That's in bold. Two comments. I was amazed about how wherever the speaker or singer was on the stage or above it, the audience could hear so well. Are there microphones all over the place to do this? And regarding pace, my only suggestion is to allow the clapping to stop before the next speaking begins. Sometimes I couldn't hear what was being said because of the clapping. Well, I wasn't sitting near a clapper, so I was good. But what about that? What about them? How do you mic it? How does it?
Every actor on the stage is mic'd. So you'll have through our hair, we have a mic pack that is hidden under our costumes, and a little wire that goes up our necks and goes up into our hairline. A lot of the girls have in their wigs. The mic packs are actually in their wigs. So that's why you can hear us everywhere. We can be backstage or on the stage at every given instant. And it's so well mixed. The show is so... There's the sound guy, the sound engineer at the back of the theater, always constantly watching the show, raising the volumes, lowering everything, so we come out clear over the music, over the clapping, over the audience. So... That's how.
One guy, I think he was a DJ or he played a program director, African American guy. He had the mic coming across his face. Why was that?
Because he has no hair.
Yeah.
Well, what do you know? I'm so glad I asked, though, because I was wondering, why is he different?
Yeah.
Yeah, most of our mics come up, you know, up our neck and, you know, that way. And
okay.
You can't do that.
Yeah. Well, I was sitting pretty close.
Yeah.
So, you're getting... so you can see really.
And just to add to feeling manipulated or whatever, that not allowing the audience to clap is also by design. So a lot of the, especially in the beginning, we don't want the audience to clap because we're trying to save everything up for what is the big three, Sherry, Big Girls Don't Cry, and Walk Like a Man. And so then that's, because that's really what a lot of people can't wait to get to. So we kind of designed it that way, or I didn't design it, but Des and the creative team designed it that way. So, you know, we're instructed as actors to kind of push through to make sure that we wait until the end of Walk Like a Man, where it's like, and now, you know, give us that love, you know, essentially
right,
is
right.
what it is.
But
so,
at the beginning, when they have the French singers doing the French version of Oh, What a Night, mm-hmm. which is really a cool thing to watch. Mm-hmm. It's so cool.
Well, what's funny, too, is some people will be like, am I at the right show?
Yeah, they'll start to get up. They'll be like, wait,
this is
wait.
The French speaking
what
version.
They open
the
playbill going, here?
Is there a translation in here?
Oh, yeah, that is a lot of fun. All right, so Diana called us back. Hi, Diana.
Hi. I am interested in knowing whether these young men or other people in the show have hopes for a second career and what that might be, because the physical demand of musicals these days make it pretty much a job of the youth. So well, are they interested in writing, directing? What are they interested in for future long-term career?
Well, interesting that question.
I'm actually a vampire. I'm 125 years old, so I'm fine.
I'm Benjamin Button. No.
First of all, we're not as young as you think we
yeah,
are.
Yeah. We're not.
But, you know, it's just like with women, the roles. There are roles out there. You know, you see them, you know, Oz and Wicked and that kind mm-hmm. of a thing, played by people that I thought literally we had passed.
Well, I mean, I think as an actor, the hard part is learning how to adapt to your type. So right now, I'm in my type that I'm in right now. And then hopefully, as I get older, I will become a different type. I may not, and I may move into directing, or I may move into gardening. I don't know. Whatever it's going to be. But actually, I can say right now, if the Hannahs are listening, I'm in love with the Jack Hanna group over there at Columbus Zoo. And I might just become a zookeeper. Who knows? But that being said, you know, we're actors, and I think that we all are kind of – we're very adaptable to any sort of situation. I have many friends who performed in Broadway shows who are now teachers, or who are now just – moms, you know, or dads or whatever, and they're all doing different things, and other ones have gone on to become pilots, you know, so it's we're very adaptable, so don't worry about us. I can say that much.
Yeah. Are you the one that played Officer Bud or something, or Buck in a
Officer Tucker?
Tucker.
Yes, on Guiding Light.
On Guiding Light. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Diana, for the call. I think we're through all of that. What song is the most demanding one in the show? Is it what you build up to? Anything that Nick Cosgrove sings, or?
I think it just changes. It changes night to night. But I know by the time I hit Working My Way, right after Can't Take, how to explain this? It's different for each Frankie. I think for myself, the high, high falsetto stuff isn't necessarily difficult for me. It's more of the like, for singers, it's more of like a chest, like a higher belt, like towards the tip top of my range before I switch into my falsetto. So in Can't Take My Eyes Off You and Working, those are in like the biggest strength chest voice place of my voice. And by that point, you know, 3/4 into the show and I'm narrating, it is, you know, it is the most difficult part of the show for me, on top of all the speaking that I'm doing and some yelling and some of the, you know, in some of the speeches, so yeah.
You never do a lot of heavy duty screaming like, say, Nick Massey's role does, where I just, you know, where you lean back in that chair and go ah! Like crazy. When did you know you had a falsetto?
I was a boy soprano, and when my voice changed, luckily, knock on wood, I still had access to that part of my voice, but. What's interesting, too, is I never really got to use that part of my voice. Like, I never, growing up, this was really the only role in musical theater that I was like, oh, wow. I saw the show for the first time in Chicago at the Bank of America Theater at the old Schubert when I was playing there when I was 17. So that gives away my age. But I just remember sitting there and saying, I need to go to school to train to do this role. I need to play this role. And so I went to Carnegie Mellon University, got my BFA, and you know, 6-7 years later, playing my dream role in my dream show, it's absolutely unbelievable. Mm. Well, dream come true.
Thanks for taking time out from it to join us today. Really appreciate it. That's Nick Cosgrove. He plays Frankie Valli. Also with us, Brandon Andrus plays Nick Massey, Nicholas Jarmard, Tommy DeVito, and Jason Kappas, Bob Gaudio in Jersey Boys. It's at the Ohio Theater right now. To learn more about that, WOSU.org/allsides. Thanks to everybody for listening today. Thanks to all of you. Enjoyed the conversation. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.